G'day everybody, my name is Glenn Hill.
And I'm Jacob Meyer.
Welcome to the Tactical Tennis Podcast.
Today we're going to talk about rituals in tennis. Glenn, we were having an interesting conversation recently about how we see rituals and how players use them. I come out on what I think is a little bit of an unusual side here, where I see kind of the ways that players use rituals poorly.
I think part of the problem there is the way players use rituals, and I think part of the problem is that in a sense the ritual is owning the player, if that makes sense.
That makes perfect sense to me. What do you mean by that?
What I mean by is, like, if I have a ritual, I'm a tennis player, and folks, when we talk about a ritual as a tennis player, an example would be the way that Maria Sharapova treats the 5 seconds before she hits a serve, or the 10 seconds before she hits a serve. And we've all seen her where she turns her back to the net and adjusts the strings and does the little foot dance, and then turns around and, you know, dresses the ball and does the hair adjustments. I mean, that would be an example of ritual, because she just does, this is an action that she does the same way every time. Another example would be Rafa with his water bottles and how he puts his water bottles in a very specific order. And that's very important to him. And when I talk about the ritual owning you versus you owning the ritual, I would use the example of Sharapova's serve as an example of her owning the ritual, where I think this is something that she does intentfully every time for the purpose of putting herself in the right mindset to play a point.
And putting herself in the right mindset?
Yes. She's creating an essential psychological state. And the ritual is helping to trigger that psychological state for her. It's like it's putting her in a familiar brain pattern, so to speak. She's activating certain neural networks through repeated action. And to her, I think that she's doing this in a way where she's intentful about creating a certain psychological state in which to play the next point. An example of a negative ritual would be, for example, I think Rafa's water bottles, where I think that's just more of an obsessive-compulsive thing. And I say, like, that's an example to me of the ritual owning him, where if the water bottles aren't right, I think that bothers him. But if the water bottles are right, I don't think it helps him in any way.
Right. So it sounds like, if we go back to the Sharapova example for a minute, it sounds like she turns around, she looks down at her racket, she adjusts her strings, she bounces her feet up and down. It sounds like you're saying, you know, she is trying to, get herself psyched up or get herself calmed down, or is that going to change? But you said she's trying to put herself into a psychological state.
Right. So when we talk about psyched up and psyched down, this is, I think, goodness gracious, this is kind of getting a lot wider than I expected very quickly. So every human being is different, and we all are different when it comes to tennis. And this, you know, I used to think about like an excitation level, like a psychological agitation level. Or I'm trying to think of the right way to phrase this. But I mean, essentially, if you think on a scale of 1 to 10, where a 10 might be, somebody who is just so amped up, they can't, like, they're jumping all around the place, almost like a boxer, like right before a fight, you know, when they're in the ring and they're dancing around and throwing shadow punches and, you know, like super psyched up. And a 1 might be somebody who's almost asleep, right? And if we could think about those as being different excitation levels, everybody is going to play their best tennis at a different point on that scale.
Okay.
Right? So I know that, for example, for me in college, I tended to play my best fairly high on the excitation level. I played serve and volley. Like, it's a very obviously high energy way to play. And that just tended to be the state where I stopped worrying about things and just competed. Other people did better when they were calmer. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's got their own jam. I mean, this speaks to, you know, what makes people tick, and everybody ticks for different reasons. So, you know, when we talk about, you know, Sharapova amping herself up or amping or calming herself down, you know, I think that what it's doing is, look, if we think about the brain as being kind of a computer, right? Which in a large sense it is. And it has kind of programs, kind of predetermined neural networks that it activates in concert, in sequence. You know, different kind of mental states will put us in different excitation levels. You know, so if I, for example, think about, imagine myself lying on a deck chair on the beach with, you know, like a warm, sunny day, and the breeze is blowing and the waves are crashing gently on the shore, and
I'm feeling better already.
Right. I mean, but that's I would like to think for the vast majority of human beings, that's a relaxing state to be in. Like, just thinking about that is relaxing.
Right.
You know?
Okay.
Whereas if you imagined yourself like being out in the middle of a thunderstorm and the thunder's hitting the ground all around you, and you know, the wind's howling and you're in imminent danger of death, like, that's probably not so relaxing. And just those ideas can create different levels of emotional kind of excitement.
And so is it fair to say then that Sharapova does a pretty good job? I mean, she seems like she's, I want to say, fairly level as far as her excitation level goes. Like, let's say she plays at like a 7.5 or something.
Right. It's
all relative to the person.
Sure. But
the idea being, like, in the first game of any match, she's pretty much ready to go.
Right.
And every now and then she'll, like, throw some big fist pumps and stuff in there, but she's very deliberate. Like, she's very purposeful.
Yes.
Point in and point out.
I would say that she's very consistent at creating, or successful at creating, a consistent kind of emotional state.
Okay.
Now, whether or not that's the ideal emotional state for her to play her best tennis, that's kind of a separate question.
Yeah, you definitely. Know?
But I would say she's consistent at that. I think other players that are very consistent would be like Rafa, as an example of somebody who, by the way, is obviously very highly ritualized in the way he goes about tennis. Yeah. I mean, I think he has rituals that are detrimental in some regards, or at least their potential, what's the word I'm looking for here? Potentially detrimental, let's just say that. But I think he also has some that are good, and he does a good job of giving himself the space, I think, to put himself in the right state to fight for the next point. Like, I mean, he's excellent at having a very short-term memory when it comes to tennis, in terms of I lost the last point. He doesn't hang on to that very much, you know?
What about Federer? Is he pretty consistent? Is he pretty...
Well, see, that's the thing. It's like, Fed, I feel like, maybe doesn't do quite as good of a job as some of the other people, you know, that I can think of.
Because I think of Federer as being like Sharapova, that he plays in a very consistent emotional space. I just think, ironically, that where he's played most of his career is actually maybe not the best place for him. I think that he's kind of he's maybe too controlled.
Yeah, well, this is one of the interesting things too to me, is one of the things I've noticed about Fed is that I feel like, when he loses or gets out of the state that he's comfortable in, or when he gets into a state that's not ideal, he doesn't do a great job of bringing himself back quickly. You know, if you can, he doesn't rattle that easily, but if he does get rattled, he doesn't pull it back. Whereas Rafa is very difficult to rattle, and if you do rattle him, he generally, like, bam, he's right back on point.
Right.
Whereas I feel like Fed, once he gets off kilter, he gets tilted, he has a much more difficult time kind of pulling it back. But they'll also, when you look at him, like, he's not as ritualized as, you know, he doesn't have some of the pre-serve, pre-point rituals that some of the other people do.
So Federer would be in contrast to, say, like, a Dimitrov, who probably gets rattled a lot more, and so he's kind of on and off all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dimitrov is much more up and down, and I think that shows in his results. I think Federer is fairly level, but I don't think Federer has good mechanisms to pull himself back once he does get off kilter, you know, or off balance emotionally. And, you know, I think we've seen that in some of the matches he's played, where if you see him start to get irritable, he'll stay irritable for a while and it'll affect his quality of play.
Right.
You know,
it's just that that's only happening against certain players in certain situations.
Or in certain situations. Like, if something happens where, you know, he feels like something unfair has happened, like, he has trouble letting go of stuff sometimes. Whereas Rafa, like, no. Like, Rafa will, generally speaking, like, that's it. Like, if it happened 10 seconds ago, it's already forgotten.
Right, move on.
He does a great job of that. And that's part of the reason why I think he's so mentally strong in that regard, is his ability to just recreate like that positive, like next point mental state and just move. So, you know, when we think about that, a lot of the times the players have rituals that have kind of come about almost by accident, you know? Mm-hmm. And this is where I think most players that are listening have an opportunity to take an active role in creating rituals for themselves to, you know, have the ritual work for them, so to speak, like not having it come about by accident. Like, oh, you know, like I played really well that day when I did this thing where I tapped my left foot 3 times before every serve. So now I'm going to tap my left foot. And then, you know, 10 years later, they don't play a point without tapping their foot left. Yeah, yeah. You know?
So that would be like an OCD thing. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that I pick up on. And this is one of the reasons why I wanted to record this conversation, is because what I see, for whatever reason, is I see people doing stuff like that. Like, oh, I stayed back against this guy who had no weapons and couldn't hurt me in the first round, so I'm staying back for the whole tournament. This kind of thinking, right? I know that's not a ritual, right? But it's that kind of thinking that I see. And it really, you know, bothers me, because I don't think that it's, you know, thinking that leads to excellent tennis. But what you're talking about, and what we've gone through with, you know, talking about a few of these pros, is the differences between how you can use things in an intentional way to actually make you play better tennis, instead of like Rafa with his water bottles. Someone knocks over his water bottle and now he's distracted, and now he's not going to play as well because he's distracted.
Right.
So how, I mean, two questions here. As a player, how do you use these things so that they work for you, like you said? And then if you're working with people, or sort of from the coaching perspective, I mean, what do you tell players? How do you work with them to help them do that? I want to see this from kind of both sides, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's actually a great question. So the first part to me is, look, you have to understand what your mindset needs to be for you to play your best tennis. You know, one of the questions that I encourage people to get in the habit of asking themselves is, how do I win the next point?
That's a great question.
You know,
I want to just interrupt you there, because I'm thinking, I don't think I asked myself that question for the first, I don't even want to admit how many years I played tennis.
Right. Well, I think it's a question people just don't ask. And, you know, so much of the time people are playing tennis and they're just kind of reacting, and it's kind of this intuitive feeling out process of, you know, this mixture of, well, I'm kind of doing the things that I like to do, and I'm kind of noticing that he doesn't like this or that. And
it seems like it's that fight or flight thing that you were talking about before.
Yeah.
Where people are just kind of like in the middle of a boxing match, they're just fighting. They're not thinking their way through things.
Right. And so but the second part of the puzzle is, like, you don't want to be overly analytical, right? You've got to find the happy medium. So this is one of the things that I try to encourage players to do, at least as a starting point, because, look, everybody's different. Like I said, you've got to find that right balance. And for me, that starts with asking this question, like, how do I win the next point? And what I like to do with people is create a space in which they ask that question. So they do something the same way before every point. And it's more about creating the time and the habit of asking the right question than it is about the actual ritual itself. So the most common one that I'll encourage people to do early on is, look, between every point, doesn't matter how long the point lasted or what's going on, just walk to the back of the court, touch the back fence with your racket, and ask the question, how do I win the next point? Come up with your answer to that. Hopefully it doesn't take you very long. And and then once you've made that decision, you step up and you execute. So, like, it might be, look, how do I win this point? I'm going to serve wide into his forehand and pull him off the court, and then take my plus one into the open court and look to come forward. Okay, bam, now I've got a plan. I step up, I try and execute my plan. If it was a good plan, the next time I come back to a deuce court, I ask that question, I might have a very similar answer, you know. But I'm keeping myself engaged in the process of what's going on. You might ask yourself a different question, or you might, you know, it might not even be about a question. Maybe you have those answers. Maybe you have your patterns, and it's just about keeping a certain energy level up, you know. So your ritual might have nothing to do with touching the back fence and asking a question. Your ritual might have everything to do with jumping up and down, or, you know, like, playing a little bit of music in your head that gets you really psyched. if you need to be kind of a little bit more agitated to play well. You know, certainly I know that I went through a period where, you know, like post-college, after I'd taken time off and I was getting back into competing again, you know, where I doubted a lot of things and I was kind of always questioning, like, is this the right shot? I mean, you know, is this the right way to play this match? How should I be playing? And I found that when I got myself kind of fired up enough to stop asking those questions and just, like, play, I fell back into a lot of the good habits that I had from, you know, the first half of my life of playing tennis. And
you were asking those questions in the middle of the match?
Yeah, but, like, though, I was asking them and coming up with answers that were far too, like, meta, far too detailed, far too intricate, far too engaged, where it was actually pulling me out of the moment of competing. You know, like, right. that I was asking questions that were making me question my ability to win. And what I found was, you know, when I got myself really kind of excited and pumped up, I stopped doubting and I stopped questioning myself and just played. I competed. And so what I got myself in the habit of doing was I would have a couple of pieces of music that I would listen to right before I played that really got me pumped up. And then during the match, you know, like on changeovers or if I needed to, like I just kind of close my eyes and kind of get that beat in my head and picture that music again and recreate that emotional state and then turn around and play. And that was what I needed at that time, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think everybody's going to need, some people need to have things that calm them down because, you know, they're so pumped up, they get jittery, they're anxious.
Yeah, that's how I was.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's got their own thing, right? And mm-hmm. and it's about creating the habits that, because what tends to happen is when we get comfortable, we lose track of the little things. And so if I get deep in a match and the fight is on, so to speak, if I'm not in the habit of recreating that same emotional state over and over and over again, what can easily happen is I my emotional state changes with the match. And I can get kind of swept away. Maybe I need to be super calm and the match is getting, you know, really tight and it's towards the end of the set. And maybe, you know, like we argue about a line call or something happens. And, you know, before you know it, I'm all kind of worked up and I don't really have a means of getting myself back anymore.
Mm.
You know, or and it might have to be like that something happens. Maybe, I get the break. Like I get the break that I've been fighting all match for and it gets me so pumped up. And next thing you know, I've got to go out and serve, and I'm so pumped up, I step up, and I rush through my next service game, and I get broken back really quickly because, you know, I played too quick, and I wasn't right. Settled and calm, and I didn't have anything that I was supposed to do in the changeover, or I didn't have a habit that let me know. Like, we get caught up in our own emotions, both positive and negative, and if we rely on ourselves being self-aware all the time to say, oh, I'm agitated right now, let me calm myself down, look, you're probably going to miss the boat. Whereas if I have the habit of calming myself down after every point or getting myself in a certain state after every point or on every changeover, then, you know, I'm far less likely to kind of forget or let things get away from me.
So it sounds like that there's at least two elements to this. One is having the routine itself. So let's take the easiest one to me is this one that that you mentioned, walking back to the fence. Now, I remember way back in the day, Gilbert put that in his book, just go back and tap the fence, right? And the idea was to give yourself some time to slow things down, I think is what how it was written in the book. But you're taking that, what I would think of as to another level and saying, you know, go through this mental process while you do that. So use right. that time purposefully instead of, you know, instead of just physically making yourself take time and hoping right. that it works. Physically make yourself take time and make sure that it works. Make sure that it happens. Elements.
It's not just about tempo control, right? I mean, like, Gilbert has a great point there about making sure that you're not playing too quickly.
Right. Right.
I mean, making sure that you're keeping kind of a steady rhythm to your match play. And that's great, but it's like, look, if we're going to do that, there's other things that we could be doing with that time in addition to it. You know, like, let's use the time productively to play a better point on the next point.
Right. So the other side to this, it seems like, is it's going to be really important for players to know what their excitation level, what their sort of emotional space, you know, what needs to be going on in their head in order for them to play their best tennis when they step up to the line.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And look, you've got to be paying attention for that. It's no coincidence. I mean, I think almost everybody listening has probably watched Rafael Nadal play at some point. And if you've watched him play enough, you've certainly noticed his habit of sprinting to the back of the court, you know, where when he's going to play, when it's go time.
That's at the very beginning of a match. If somehow you haven't watched the warm-up. He does that after the coin toss.
Yeah, after the coin toss. Like, he literally sprints back.
Yeah.
And part of the reason that he's doing that is, one is, I mean, look, I think Rafa gets nervous like everybody else. And he's channeling that nervous energy. But the second part of while he's doing that is he's also, when he's channeling that nervous energy, he's putting himself in a certain state. Like he's channeling that energy into a certain state. He's taking active control of the situation and saying, yeah, look, I've got this nervous energy and I'm going to use it to act. And he's sprinting and he's getting himself worked up. He's raising his heart rate. You know, he's getting the blood flow out to his legs. And he's kind of getting his body going because Rafa cannot go out there and play at low intensity. You know.
Well, he can, but he's just going to spin the ball like onto the service tee all day.
Well, right, he's not going to win.
Shadow himself.
Like Rafa cannot play at low intensity and win, not against good players. And what he's doing, and part of the reason he does that is he's making sure that he brings his intensity level. He's raising it for the warm up. And then he goes out, and for those of you who don't know, if you talk to anybody who's played against Rafa, his warm-up is intense.
Oh, my God.
I mean, you could talk about this, Jake.
It's harder than some guys. Like his warm-up is harder than the hardest workout that some players on the ATP Tour have ever done. And that's not an exaggeration. Like, now, that's only a few guys.
Right.
But, I mean,
how hard does he hit the ball in warm-ups, Jacob?
I mean, it's hard to make the impression. Like, if you think he's got a big forehand in matches, you have no idea. In warmups, he hits his forehand as big as he serves in matches. I mean, he's hitting forehands 90 miles an hour every time. Every time.
Crushes
from anywhere. Just demolishes the ball. I mean, he's losing maybe 30% of his velocity once he starts playing.
Right, and he takes a lot of that and puts it into spin. But, yeah, I mean, like, the intensity's super high because he's setting the tone from the beginning of the match. Like, his warm-up is a ritual in itself, and it's kind of a bigger picture one. It's not I do this between every point. It's like, I start every match the same way. We coin toss, I'm sprinting to the back of the court. I'm ripping the heck out of the ball right from the beginning. And I do this every time I play so that I start every match the same way. And he's not exactly known as a slow starter on tour.
No.
He comes out ready to fight, like right from the beginning. No. Like he's at you from the beginning of the match.
Guys actually change how they warm up to play him.
I mean, you have to.
But you know, they don't change how they warm up to play Federer.
Right, because Fed doesn't come out like that.
Right, even though they might think they have a better chance against one guy or another, it doesn't matter. Like, the thing is, like, even when people don't realize it, you look around the locker room, guys change their warm-up. They do longer warm-ups. They do more intense warm-ups. They know, like, I have to be sweating when I step on the court. Like, I better be just as ready as I am after the first set on the first point of that match. Otherwise, I'm going to go down a break. I'm going to be down 3-love before
I can. Well, this is important. Like, if you step out onto the court to warm up with Rafa and you're not already firing at 100%, you're going to have a hard time, like, warming up with him. You're going to be late on everything. You're going to have trouble controlling the ball. You're going to shank. And that's not exactly going to put you in a great mindset to win a match against him. You know, you're going to feel like you're playing catch-up all day. You have to walk out in the court with him ready to go right from the beginning. And that's just a part of what he does. And he does it the same way every time. So that's an example of, you know, I said Rafa does a great job with rituals overall. I think he's probably the most strongly ritualized player that's out on tour, and most of the rituals he has, I think, are really good ones. Like, he does a really great job. I think he also just hangs on to a couple that aren't so awesome, like the stuff with the water bottles, where I think it makes him a little vulnerable.
There's a big difference there between, you know, he's sprinting after the coin flip, that has a positive impact, it seems like, on his game all around, has a positive impact even on his opponents, where the water bottle thing, like, guys joke about that. Like, guys right. laugh about it in the locker room. They laugh like, oh, you know, if you're in trouble, it's like, we're all like, maybe just, like, you know, throw your racket over there, knock him over. Maybe you get a lucky break, you know, and get yourself back into the match.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, I don't think anyone's ever done it, right?
Like, well, people have tipped his water bottles over on purpose.
Well,
it's happened.
They're not friends, I'm sure.
No. I mean, I'm trying to think who did it. Like, I think Rosal did it. Like, intentionally. you can find video of it on YouTube. Like, he literally just walks by and just casually tips over water bottle. Like, the water bottle. It's hilarious.
I laugh because I find humor in it. The thing that you should understand is the reason that most of us would never actually entertain that is just because we have too much respect for Rafa and the way that he goes about things. You know, you want to beat him on the court. You don't want to, you know, do gamesmanship, I don't know, crappy stuff like that. You know, and I don't think it's really going to work in the long term anyway.
Maybe, no, I mean, I think for most of the time it's not. But just the point is, like, that's an example of the ritual owning the player a little bit versus the other way around. And Rafa has so many rituals that he uses positively. And then this is one of these things that it's just like, I don't even really think of it as a ritual in a way. It's just like a habit. Like, it's a thing. Like, it's almost like a superstition, right? And I think a lot of players have that too. And what you want to try to do as a player is try to eliminate your superstitions and take positive control with rituals and positive habits. And so touching the back fence between points could be an example of one. You know, Maria Sharapova's example, where she turns her back to the court and adjusts her strings every point. I mean, that's an example of another. I mean, it's not really about whatever it is that you're actually doing. It's about using that action to trigger another action, whether that action is an explicit question yourself, such as, how do I win the next point? The reason I like getting people in the habit of asking that question is because it frames their mind forward, not backward. You're thinking about the future and not the past. And so I think it's really useful, especially for people who have trouble when they make an error letting go of the past point or letting go of the opportunity that maybe they just lost or something, you know, negative that they're fixating on, and puts mm-hmm. them into a forward mindset of what's going to happen next. And, you know, that's the other thing is, I mean, that's another question you could maybe ask is, what's going to happen next? You know, there's a lot of different ways you can approach this, but the main thing is taking active control of what's happening on the court, taking active control of your own mental and emotional state. Because every time you get your 25 seconds between points and your 90 seconds on changeovers, that's an opportunity to affect yourself. And you can't control what the other person does in that time, but you sure as heck can control what you do in that time.
Okay, so I've got one more question.
Yeah, fire away.
I'm a tennis player. I'm out there playing matches. I've listened to this and I thought, you know, okay, this makes some sense to me. You know, I'm going to experiment a little bit with it. What sorts of questions should I ask myself so that I can evaluate if my habits and my rituals are really benefiting me, or maybe if they're not so good?
Right. So one of the big things is being able to identify when you're playing well. You know, and that's important, because what you want to try to do is create an understanding of, how do I feel when I'm playing well? I don't mean like, do I feel good? I mean, obviously when you're playing well, you probably feel good. But when I'm playing well, am I like super pumped up? When I'm playing well, am I in like this zen-like state where I'm not thinking about anything? When I play well, am I, you know, like, what level of like intellectual engagement do I have in the match? Am I breaking down the X's and O's, or am I just running on instinct? This answer is going to be different for everybody. There's going to be different combinations. Some people want to be like super pumped up, but also really thoughtful, like asking questions and answering questions and thinking about the X's and O's. Some people want to be super calm and not thinking at all. Some people want to be some combination thereof. Like, it's about being able to know when you're playing well. And it might be different for doubles and singles, because obviously those two are almost like different sports at times in terms of the energy levels and whatnot. But if you don't know what state it is that you play well in, then you have no idea what sort of a ritual to create or what your ritual should be trying to create. Like, you have to know what it is that you're trying to recreate. And so for me, like I said, like, I identified that I was having a lot of self-doubt, but when I got extremely fired up, I didn't have space for those doubts anymore. So I created a series of rituals that were based around getting myself fired up. I don't anymore because I'm in a different emotional state now. Like, if I'm going to step out and court play a doubles match, like, I'm not questioning my ability to win the doubles match or to do the things I need to do to win a doubles match. And so I don't have to get fired up for those things, you know? And that's the key factor is identify what it is that you're trying to recreate. And then realistically what you want to do, the questions you want to be asking after the fact is, are my rituals getting me to that state that I want to be in to play well? And if they are and I'm not playing well, then I probably have the state wrong. If they're not and I'm not playing well, then I need to find some way to change my ritual so it's recreating that state, whether it's kind of with music or, you know, thinking about a movie scene or whatever it is that gets you going or calms you down. And then the last question is, if I am doing the rituals and I am recreating the state that I want to and I'm playing well, then guess what? Ding, 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 you found a winner. The only thing left to do now is pay attention to if over the course of time, whether it's months or years, you change and your kind of emotional state needs to change with it.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully that answered your question.
Yeah, it does. I mean, this has actually been really helpful for me. I think it clarifies a lot on being purposeful with these things instead of just having, you know, I mean, I don't know about you, but like, I don't want to have water bottle stuff like where Rafa does.
Yeah, no.
Like, I think that's I think it's a bigger deal than it seems on the surface. I think it's a distraction. And so I think it's important, you know, for myself as a player and then for the players that I work with to have, you know, the right kinds of, you know, thoughts going through their heads. So.
Absolutely, absolutely. And look, people, as smart as we all might like to think that we are, we can really only think about one thing at a time. You know, like, there's been a lot of good science that shows that the multitasking is a myth. It doesn't really exist. You can't actively think about more than one thing at a time. So if you can only think about one thing at a time, choose what that one thing's going to be and think about it. And then, you know, the other stuff's not going to get in the way. So, look, if you found this helpful and you want to know more or you want to hear us talk about something else entirely, guess what? You can ask. I have an email address and it's glenn@technicaltennis.com.
And if you think this is the worst thing you've ever heard, then definitely email me, jacob@technicaltennis.com.
Yeah, definitely send all the complaints his way and all the good stuff my way. But yeah. Folks, seriously, reach out and let us know if there's something you'd like to hear us talk about. Whether it's something instructional or a professional player you want to have broken down or argued about, there's not a whole lot related to tennis that we're not willing to discuss. And we're probably going to do it whether or not you ask us to. So feel free to take control a little bit and send us an idea. Meanwhile, you can sign up for our newsletter on the website, which is at tacticaltennis.com. And, you know, tell your friends. Share the podcast on Twitter and Facebook and other social media that I probably don't even know about yet, because we have no advertisers and we'd like to keep it that way.
And, oh, you know, God, I hope we never have advertisers.
The more people that are you know, that get shared around, the easier this all is. So thanks for listening and have a great day. Are you going to say goodbye?
No, I wasn't planning on it.
Okay.